Good evening. This is Lou Caravelli. It's December 8th, 2022. You're about to hear the cutting-edge radio warning program, The Divided Kingdom. It's broadcast on WWCR, Global Star, Liberty Works Radio Network, K-Star Talk Radio, and KingdomStarRadio.com. How important is radio? We think even more important in the days of Twitter and Facebook censorship of conservative voices than it was even while forbidden in the World War II times. To wartime people, it was precious. Listen to this excerpt from the introduction to the book Last Hope Island by Lynn Olson, publisher, Random House, 2017. For as long as the war lasted, Europeans engaged in a precious nightly ritual. They retrieved their radio sets, which had been outlawed by the Germans, from a variety of hiding places. Beneath the floorboards, behind canned goods in the kitchen cupboard, secreted in the chimney. Then, in whatever the setting, the owners of these sets switched them on and tuned to the BBC in time to hear the chiming of Big Ben and the magical words, "This is London calling." During and after the war, Europeans described those furtive moments listening to BBC news programs as their lifeline to freedom. A Frenchman who escaped to London late in the war recalled, quote, "It's impossible to explain how much we depended on the BBC. In the beginning, it was everything," unquote. And this is Lou speaking now. Is Patriot Christian Radio just as needed and precious a guide today? Our listener Art reveals the integral part the Divided Kingdom plays in his everyday evenings, even as his latest letter gives a common...
I think that's common sense, maybe.
Oh, I think it is, yes. A common sense but very essential bit of advice to be ready for a blackout. Keep your flashlight handy. Art says, quote, "Based on what if, say, a Thursday night I'm in my recliner listening to 4.840 to that couple out of Maryland. Everything goes black. Just put brand new batteries in the shortwave. Simulation, practice run. Out of the chair, after I grab flashlight, I almost always have one within arm's reach, even in my vehicle, and light some candles."
And Lou, this is so important, what Art just told all of you Divided Kingdom listeners. This is Elizabeth Caverly, along with my peer, Lou Caverly. One night we were sitting here in the summer, and all of a sudden, bam, no electricity, no lights, and we learned our lesson that we should put some emergency lanterns in every room. And Art has one better. You ought to have that flashlight right next to you so that then you can go and get your candles lined up and everything so you're not stumbling around in the dark. Pick up the story, Lou.
Yes, Art continues. "I'm pretty isolated where I'm at, but outside I can still see all the way to the other side of town." And this is Lou speaking, Elizabeth Cuppet Caravelli, and I hope that this program will also shine a light of meaning and sustenance for you all over the years to come.
Thank you, Lou, for the key radio story, past and present. Shortly, we move into our program, More December Demons. First, we'd like to thank more listeners. We hope we're not missing any of you, but these are the most recent ones in this last year, for helping to keep us on the air. Edward, Brett, and Char have helped us numerous times, rescuing us when we were in danger of disappearing from WWCR. So we thank them from the bottoms of our hearts. So did Ken. He saved us in a large way once this year. And then we have Sherry, Marjorie, Carolyn, Lauren, David, and Greta, David and Donald, William and Rita. More faithful helpers include Steve every month for years. And Steve and his late wife, Carol, had a wonderful ministry in which they actually reached some of the Chinese-speaking people in America with the gospel translated. And our wonderful doctor friend in Pennsylvania, and for the last two or three times he's helped us weekly. Did you hear that, listeners? Weekly, he has written that he needs prayer for his health. Please keep praying for him. And we urge him to use distilled water, to use vitamin C, vitamin B complex. Solgar is a good one. There are others. And B12 sublingually. If any of you are not doing that, you must do this because older people cannot digest vitamin B12 that's in capsules. You have to have it under your tongue for it to go into your bloodstream. And they're misdiagnosed many times, these older people, as having Alzheimer's. We had a black friend named Carrie Green. Oh, what a joy she was in our lives. Wasn't she, Lou?
Oh, very much.
And she had a funny misnomer. She called them old-timers disease victims, old-timers. And we thought that was about as descriptive as anything could be for Alzheimer's, old-timers disease. But you don't want old-timers disease, so get that B12, that kind that you put under your tongue. Now, there are more helpers. Brenda, Mike. Oh, Brenda sent us a beautiful painting, several beautiful paintings, and one illustrates this. These are paintings she did, so talented. One illustrates the narrow way, and we have that hanging right inside our front door. Then we have Mike, Frank, Kathy, Elaine, Dave, Brian, who's living in a high altitude and gives us so many health tips and is watching the scene so carefully, Elijah, Mary, Steve, and Denise, Alice, Mark, Stephen, Barbara, Al, Joe, and Peggy, Darren, and Linda, Alan, and Sean. North of the border, we include Richard and Peter. We have John Robert. And we have Clarence, and we mentioned Clarence. His short, pithy notes of encouragement just really give us a lift every time we see them. And, of course, Art. Art is very busy. And, again, we mention possibly this came from Art. We're not certain, but there are little cards that can be made that talk about the dangers of COVID, that talk about Divided Kingdom Radio. Maybe God will lead you to circulate something. The Trucker Church, the man who is connected with the Trucker Church, we thank you all for this help and for your prayers and your notes and letters and the stamps. The stamps are so helpful. And here is one of our most recent letters that really touched our hearts and gives us impetus to strive to be helpful and meaningful to your lives, listeners, in the way the BBC was to the occupied peoples of World War II. November 28, 2022, Lou and Elizabeth, my husband and I enjoy listening on 4840 on Thursdays. You two are an inspiration as you go through the news together, perfectly complementing each other. It is so refreshing to hear a couple speak to each other lovingly, as you do, and with such compassion toward all mankind as you relay the most devastating information. Thank you for being there. And that was Darren and Linda. Thank you both. Well, this is something we will treasure, these words.
In the demonic destruction of American cities, never underestimate the power of one man. As we check out more demons in December, this is our opening profile of a man under the influence of satanic darkness. From WorldNet Daily, George Soros, The Man Who Would Be God, by David Kupelian. Published October 31st, 2022. As America progressively unravels in every area, from the disintegration of core constitutional freedoms of speech, press, and religion, to the explosion of violent crime and attacks on law enforcement, to today's multi-pronged assaults on free and fair elections, to what can only be described as a full-scale foreign invasion of America, one virtually engineered by this nation's leaders, somehow the name George Soros always mysteriously seems to crop up. For decades, Hungarian-born left-wing, quote, billionaire philanthropist, unquote, George Soros has supported, advocated, and bankrolled everything rotten, subversive, destructive, hateful, and evil. Currently, Soros' name is most often heard in conjunction with funding dozens of radically pro-criminal district attorneys across America. Many of them household names due to the spectacular explosion in violent crime they have enabled. Soros DA Larry Krasner in Philadelphia. Soros DA Kim Fox, Chicago. Chesa Boudin, San Francisco. And scores of others from George Gascon, Los Angeles, to Marilyn Mosby, Baltimore, to Kim Gardner, St. Louis. 75 in all. Each elected because of massive infusions of Soros cash into their campaigns. In turn, the Soros DAs have transformed America's most beautiful, dynamic, and storied cities into degraded, crime-infested hellscapes of skyrocketing murder, rape, robbery, rioting, arson, drug abuse, wild mass shoplifting episodes, and other mayhem, leading not only to widespread property loss, suffering, and death, but also to major exoduses by those with the means to relocate. And yet, radical progressive prosecutors constitute just one recent manifestation of Soros' so-called philanthropy. He funds efforts to legalize dangerous drugs. He supports euthanasia and assisted suicide. He funds Black Lives Matter. He is for socialism and globalism and open borders and defunding the police. He's for devaluing America's currency, once telling the Financial Times that, quote, an orderly decline of the dollar is actually desirable, unquote, even though that amounts to an outright theft of America's life savings, Americans' life savings, and investments. He favors the destruction of American sovereignty in favor of global governance. He doesn't like Israel and has supported her enemies. He detests fair elections and truthful news coverage, and indeed funds organizations that daily attack the only free press America currently has, including Soros-funded attacks on WND, that's WorldNet Daily, and this writer. And that was David, by the way, David Kupelian. In short, if it's immoral, subversive, and anti-American, Soros favors, organizes, and funds it. If it's noble and freedom-producing, like free markets, fair elections, and constitutional government, he sets up and funds organizations to undermine and destroy it.
Messianic fantasies, the creator of everything. Even though conservatives generally regard him as akin to the evil emperor in Star Wars, the empire's shadowy and malevolent behind-the-scenes power, George Soros simultaneously represents the lifeblood, indeed life itself, to hundreds of organizations on the far left. They see him as a messianic figure, a revered leader, a godfather, almost a god, who provides good things for his children. Indeed, Soros admits he wants to recreate the world in his image, like a god. That characterization is not opinion, hyperbole, or rhetorical flourish. Living out, quote, messianic fantasies and openly likening himself to, quote, some kind of god, is precisely how George Soros, ironically an atheist and self-hating Jew, describes himself in his more candid moments. And we have to interrupt here to say that apparently he was giving help to the Nazis or his father. There was a connection there against his own Jewish people during the Holocaust times. Back to the article. I fancied myself as some kind of god, Soros once wrote. If truth be known, I carried some rather potent messianic fantasies with me from childhood, which I felt I had to control, otherwise they might get me in trouble. When the British online newspaper The Independent asked Soros to explain these extraordinary statements, he responded, quote, it is a sort of disease when you consider yourself some kind of god, the creator of everything, but I feel comfortable about it now since I began to live it out. As Rachel Ehrenfeld and Sean McComber wrote in a revealing Los Angeles Times op-ed, George Soros, the god who carries around some dangerous demons. Soros has proved that with the vast resources of money at his command, he has the ability to make the once unthinkable acceptable. His work as a self-professed amoral, and that's in quotes, financial speculator, has left millions in poverty when their national currencies were devaluated. And he pumped so much cash into shaping former Soviet republics to his liking that he has bragged that the former Soviet empire is now the Soros empire. Now he's turned his eye on the internal affairs of the United States. Today's U.S., he writes in his latest book, quote, the bubble of American supremacy is a, quote, threat to the world, run by a Republican Party that is the devil child of an unholy alliance between, quote, market fundamentalists and, quote, religious fundamentalists. We have become a, quote, supremacist nation. Despite his reputation as an international philanthropist, Soros remains candid about his true charitable tendencies. Quote, I am sort of a deus ex machina, Soros told the New York Times in 1994. Quote, I am something unnatural. I'm very comfortable with my public persona because it is one I have created for myself. It represents what I like to be as distinct from what I really am. You know, in my personal capacity, I'm not actually a selfless, philanthropic person. I'm very much self-centered.
Soros was more succinct when he explained his life philosophy to biographer Michael Kaufman. Quote, I am kind of a nut who wants to have an impact, he said. Yet Soros' remarkable visions, many would say delusions, don't end there. As Aaron Feld and McComber explain, quote, next to my fantasies about being God, I also have very strong fantasies of being mad, Soros once confided on British television. And he continued, in fact, my grandfather was actually paranoid. I have a lot of madness in my family. So far, I have escaped it, unquote. Except he hasn't escaped it. Not only has George Soros succumbed to a form of madness, but he's imposing his insanity on the United States of America. After all, his motto for changing society is simple. Quote, if I spend enough, I will make it right, unquote. Combine that with his proclamation in his 1995 book, Soros on Soros, we have this, quote, I do not accept the rules imposed by others, and in periods of regime change, the normal rules don't apply, unquote.
And Lou, we have to interject here. This is Elizabeth speaking. I think once you talked to me about the nature of God, when I had doubts many years ago whether God was all good, you, the mathematician, had a very rational kind of defense of God. And when we think Soros is in opposition to God here, so he is on the other side. He is on the satanic side. And you had said to me, Elizabeth, look at the universe. If God were not all good, he'd have to be somewhat crazy because everything would start to go wrong. The planets would fall. Gravity would cease. All of these intricate, amazing omnipotences of God in his creation, it would stall out. It wouldn't work. There would be problems. But God is all good, and his universe is lasting. So that when we look at this pseudo kind of God, playing God, we know this is Satan's counterfeit. And we know that we will see these evil results with all these DAs paid off in America. Go on. We're getting this portrait of this man who would be God.
Yes. Let me just repeat that last sentence. Combine that is his quote, if I spend enough, I will make it right. Combine that with his proclamation in his 1995 book, Soros on Soros, quote, I do not accept the rules imposed by others, and in periods of regime change, the normal rules don't apply, unquote. Combine that and you have a formula for truly epic madness imposed on hundreds of millions of people by a super wealthy atheist who thinks he's a god.
And again, we put out this parallel when Lou said to me, God is all good because he doesn't let chaos and mayhem take over his universe. He is in control. But when we look at the other side, the fruits of what Soros is doing, they are evil. They will result in the takedown of countries, the takedown of peoples, the destruction of mankind, not the ennoblement of mankind that God wants. Go ahead, Lou. What else in this portrait of the man who would be God?
I believe that concludes that.
Well, that's just so important. And now I guess we have to think about this man who thinks he's God. And now when we bring that out in a wider kind of look at society, we see the fruits of death, and we see the kinds of things that he supports are being supported by others. Now, perhaps there's another demon of death. We're talking here about more demons in December. LifeSite News, Trudeau's euthanasia program is a satanic substitute for real-life affirming health care. Euthanasia is not about killing pain. It Is About Killing Patients by David Cook. And again, this is LifeSite News. As the euthanasia death toll rises in Canada and the government expands its criteria for killing, more Canadians are being targeted. More of us are at risk. That's why I recently published a short 34-page book titled Trudeau's Maid Service. And listeners, that is spelled like a kitchen maid or somebody cleaning in the house, maid, M-A-I-D. Trudeau's Maid Service. And again, this is David Cook's book titled Trudeau's Maid Service, A Euthanasia Program for Canada. This book is a concise expose of Trudeau's euthanasia scheme. And I would assume if you go to LifeSite News, you would be able to get more information on David Cook's book, Trudeau's Maid Service, A Euthanasia Program for Canada. Canadians need to know the truth about legal euthanasia, who it is killing, and how it is corrupting our health care system. We need to recognize the evil our government has unleashed. Up until 2016, euthanasia was rightly considered an act of murder under Canadian law. However, with the support of a radical Supreme Court ruling, the Trudeau government decreed doctors and nurses could murder their terminally ill patients if they, quote, consent. This initial class of, quote, candidates for killing the terminally ill was soon expanded to include those who are not even dying. Disabled Canadians were added to the, quote, eligibility list in 2021. Next, those experiencing depression or other forms of mental illness will be added starting March 17, 2023. I felt a particular burden to write this book in light of the impending addition of depression as a criterion for euthanasia. I don't often share this, but I have struggled with depression throughout my adult life. In fact, 25 years ago, I was in such a terrible state that I had even contemplated suicide. If euthanasia had been available back then, and my doctor suggested it, God only knows what would have happened. Now, what will happen to those facing similar struggles with depression next March? Currently, we know that the number of those killed by Trudeau's euthanasia program have been skyrocketing year after year. Check out these disturbing statistics below, found on page 17 of my book. Did you realize that over 30,000 Canadians were euthanized in total over the first 5 years of the program? That's roughly equal to the population of Stratford, Ontario. Imagine the entire city of Stratford wiped off the map without any major political fuss or outrage.
And how will these statistics multiply once those who are suicidal start receiving government assistance to commit suicide? Unfortunately, I believe many Canadians have been terribly misled concerning Trudeau's euthanasia program. Masquerading under the sweet-sounding euphemism of MAID, M-A-I-D, short for Medical Assistance in Dying, the government claims euthanasia is all about helping people die with, quote, dignity, unquote, and, quote-unquote, compassion. But that's simply not true. Trudeau's Orwellian maid service, offered for free to those most vulnerable, is actually a murderous, population-reducing, cost-cutting scheme. It is a satanic substitute for real, compassionate, life-affirming health care. Even the World Medical Association denounces euthanasia as unethical. Euthanasia is not about killing pain. It is about killing patients. Euthanasia is not about what's best for a struggling soul. It's about what's best for a corrupted system and corrupted politicians. It is not a healthcare solution. Rather, it is a final solution. In a striking parallel to the Nazi T4 euthanasia program in the 1930s, Germany, our liberal government's euthanasia program has also convinced many people that some lives are, quote, unworthy of life, unquote. Our society is starting to believe that lie. Our healthcare system is proclaiming that lie in not so many words. And more consenting, that's in quotes, consenting Canadians, are losing their lives to that lie. It is my hope and prayer that my new book, Trudeau's Maid Service, a euthanasia program for Canada, will shine a bright light on this dark practice of legalized euthanasia in Canada. If we want to stop this evil from spreading, people need to see it for what it is. Made is murder. And no one has the right to murder. If you are interested in a copy of my book for yourself, would like to share it with friends, family, your doctor, pharmacist, or other healthcare professionals, it's available at Baptist House or on Amazon. I am hoping to get this book into as many hands as possible, especially our politicians. In fact, I am personally planning to send a copy to every member of Parliament. In closing, I want to ask you to consider making a donation to help CLC. And, let's see, I'm drawing a blank on what that refers to, but in our continuing efforts to stand up for the sanctity of human life from conception to natural death. We are working hard every day to promote a culture of life in Canada and to refute the lies of the one who, quote, was a murderer from the beginning, unquote. That's quoting from the Gospel of John, chapter 8, verse 43. Help us to shine the light of life across this land.
And let's get the author's name again, Lou.
Yes, the author's name is... let me see now. Somehow that seems to have been chopped off.
Let me look at the beginning of the article. It was David Cook, C-O-O-K-E, at LifeSite News. So I'm sure that you could do a search and find out more about
that. Sure.
Now, there are more details. Here's some more info and statistics about the results of this Bill 14, I believe, C-14. Natural News, Bell Carter. It is constitutional to perform medically assisted suicide in Canada, thanks to Bill C-14, also known as the Medical Assistance in Dying Act, MAID. Any Canadian who could show that their death is, quote, reasonably foreseeable, would be deemed eligible. In 2017, the first full year following MAID's passing, a government study reported that 2,838 people opted for assisted suicide. The number skyrocketed to 10,064 by 2021. Alou, that's only 4 years.
Yes, that's right.
That's about five times as many.
Yeah.
Accounting for more than 3% of all deaths in Canada that year. A total of 31,664 MAID deaths had been recorded, and the large majority were in the 65 to 80 age bracket when they died. In 2017, only 34 MAID deaths were in the 18 to 45-year-old group. It increased to 49 in 2018, 103 in 2019, 118 in 2022, and 139 in 2021. Now, again, back in 2017, Lou, we had 34, and now it up to 139 4 years later. What percentage of increase about is that, 34 to 139?
Well, 34 to 139, I would say, is at least 300%.
Wow. The article says, today, thousands of people who could live for many years are applying to kill themselves. Doctors taking an increasingly liberal view when it comes to defining reasonably foreseeable death may have contributed to the increase in application. Now, Elizabeth Cuppett-Caverly, here I am commenting. When David Cook said that many years ago he was a victim of depression, when I was in my 20s, I did not know that I had lupus. And I had a lot of anxiety, and I had other physical health problems, like mouth sores, after I had spent a lot of time out in the sun. And those of you who know about lupus know that Celtic peoples are pretty much prone to this. Irish people, for one thing. Remember how fair their skin is and the sun is their enemy. But, see, I thought that I just had anxiety. And later, when I was diagnosed with lupus, we met a young woman who had actually been put on the psych ward and went through a lot of horrible things. But the real thing was this physical problem. And Henrietta Elagin, who founded, I think, the first Lupus Foundation of America, was the last person, not the last person, she left on the last ship out of Bulgaria when Hitler was taking over. And I've always thought that this was really ordained of God to bring her to America so that she could begin to unearth all the truth about lupus and write her book that was so important. But at any rate, in her book, she recounted this experience that she was sort of lying out on the beach in Florida, and this is before she knew she had lupus. And the movie star, Gloria Swanson, walked by, and Henrietta, realized she tried to talk to Gloria Swanson to say hello, and her brain would not go with the speed of her mouth. And I had sort of a recoiling in shock. That same thing had happened to me in my 20s. That was so alarming to me. But you see, our bodies play a role in our mental faculties. When we have something wrong in our bodies and what the foods we eat, all of these things, the toxins of the world, diseases affect us. So you see, eventually I got the right information about myself. Now, what if I had been counseled by people in sort of this maid capacity? What if we had that in and they would have said, oh, you don't want to have to suffer anxiety. Let us take you out. Let's just get rid of you. I wouldn't be here on the radio. I wouldn't be here telling you, warning you about foods. Last time we warned you about the dangers of farmed salmon and tilapia, all the chemicals and all the things, all the amazing things that were in Beyond Meat. No, you see, we are to endure. And I've talked before, and I don't want to be self-serving, but the kind of experience I went through from 1993 fall, waking up overnight, crippled instantly, till about March of 1995 with Lyme disease, another bioweapon probably from Plum Island. It was horrendous every second of every day. You felt so ill. You couldn't read a magazine. You couldn't. You just tried to hang on. But am I ever glad I hung on? You see, God will reward you. If you try to seek physical answers, you try to seek vitamin supplements. We have one of our listeners who's been very ill with kind of a chronic fatigue syndrome for years, and he had written us from the far west that he was very ill again, very weak. And I identified, because there was a time, listeners, that it was too much for me to stand in the kitchen and bake cake. I was too weak. Now, that's long gone. It's like a distant memory. I have a lot of vitality. I work hard. Lou, you know how hard I've been working for Christmas. It's like a department store here, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It's like you can barely walk around.
Every year you've known me, it's been like this.
Yep.
And it's really rewarding. It's really wonderful. All the people I've ever encountered and known, and some of them were very needy. It's partly what I live for. But at any rate, you see, what I'm saying is God will help you if you make him first and you turn your life over to him. That's what Lou and I have done. We weren't like that in our early radio days. We wanted to be sort of patriot stars. When John Stadtmiller invited me to come on RBN, and then later Ted Anderson invited us on Genesis Communications Network, it took a long evolution, and I shouldn't use that word, but into God's will, that we needed to turn our lives over to him, and he would finance our program, he would bring us the listeners, but we had to do what he asked us to do. And that was not to promote a patriotic uprising or anything like that. It was to witness to Jesus Christ as Lord of our salvation and to have us have faith in him as well as stand against the evil. So you see here, we're giving these testimonies how God has been faithful, and he has brought us through to get rid of a large part of that terrible credit card debt. But as we told you, we still have about 5 loans in addition to the home equity and the mortgage. So if you can help us without harming your family, several of you have helped us this week a little bit, and we're so grateful. We're so grateful to Robert. And please keep praying for him who has had this bereavement of his wife of more than 50 years. Pray for Robert and his son Lee. We ask for you to do that. And you can help us by sending us stamps. You can send us a money order. This can be anonymous. You can send us a little cash. You can send a check made out to WWCR, or to Global Star Communications. Very soon, the little radio monthly fee will be due. What is it, about $70, Lou?
Yes, typically just about 70 a month.
So we have costs. We have costs with the printer. It's giving kind of a signal now that, what, the head, something is going wrong?
Yeah, the drum. I'm not quite sure what that is.
So you see, all these things, we always need what you can give us without harming your family. So send anything you can give us that the Lord leads to Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And again, that's Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And we want to give a special thank you to Captain Daryl Everhart, who is always praying for us and in our corner, and to Kathy at WWCR, who's been our faithful friend for a long time. Now, we're getting back to this situation there in Canada about what these doctors now, they're taking an increasing liberal view. Increasingly liberal view, and this is again by Bell Carter at Natural News, when it comes to defining reasonably foreseeable death, may have contributed, you see, this change in attitude to the increase in applications. According to Rupa Subramania, a freelance columnist for National Post and Nikkei Asia, the government amended the original legislation in 2021, stating that one could apply for MAID even if one's death were not reasonably foreseeable. This second track of applicants simply had to show that they had a condition that was, quote, intolerable to them and could not, quote, be relieved under conditions that they consider acceptable. Listeners, that Lyme disease was intolerable to me, but I hung on. I hung on. And I'll never forget the day that Lou walked into the back bedroom and saw me sitting in the one chair in the house that I was able to sit on. I was so crippled. And he said, I've had a flash. God said, you're going to be well. You remember that, too, don't you?
Oh, very, very,
yes.
Very well.
See, God never abandons us. He's there in the worst kinds of hells we have. Now, back to the article. In March 2023, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's government is scheduled to expand the pool of eligible suicide seekers to include the mentally ill and, quote, mature minors. Now, Lou, doesn't that give you the heebie-jeebies?
Yes,
the
mature minor.
What in the world? You know, it's reminiscent of Dr. Garofalo and these other brutes who are cutting off the breasts and the genitals of teenagers, isn't it?
Yes,
they're saying that children are now mature minors.
Some children are pretty mature at age 5. Does that mean you're going to allow them to make the decision at that age?
Yeah, you know, that's really... That's extremely powerful, Lou. That's sarcasm.
Yeah.
That's what the Soros view, the evil, demonic view, would be, that children are mature at 5. Okay, back to the article. This move solicited various negative reactions. Palliative care physician Dr. Dawn Davies, a MAID supporter when it was first conceived, said she is worried about where this might lead. She could imagine kids with personality disorders or other mental health issues saying they wanted to die. Now, Lou, you better believe in this T4 society that we're going into, they're going to be encouraged by the medical personnel. They're
yes.
going to be encouraged that, yes, you want to die. Yes, heaven will be nice. Or if it isn't heaven, you'll be out of your misery. And so this doctor who once was in favor says now, some of them will mean it, some of them won't, she said, and we won't necessarily be able to discern who is who. Now, again, what's wrong with her attitude? She's still acceptant that perhaps some of these kids with personality disorders, it might be okay if they mean it. We can't tell who's who. Isn't this the reprobate mind? There shouldn't be any question that this is a category. These children should never, never be given over to this option. Now, back to the article, attorney Yu Shur, the founder of Shur Law Professional Corporation, told Subramania that while other countries have explored extending assisted suicide to minors, those governments have insisted on substantial safeguards, including parental notification and consent. Quote, Canada is poised to become the most permissive euthanasia regime in the world, including for minors and people with only psychiatric illness, having already removed the foreseeability of death or terminal illness as an essential condition to accessing euthanasia or assisted suicide, Scherer said. Related, Canadian hospice group pushes to normalize euthanasia of children who are, quote, suffering, many due to vaccine injuries. Oh, boy, we really have a bombshell here to bring out, and we hope that those listeners in Canada will pray hard about this and do something. Again, we urge all of you to go to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, and read essays under Breaking News. Let's move right on, Lou.
Yes. Scherer is a consultant to Margaret Marciller, a mother who found out that her son had an appointment with a doctor who would facilitate his death. Marciller is doing everything she can just to save him. According to LifeSite News, her son, Keanu Bafabian, confirmed that Dr. Joshua Tepper withdrew his support from the young man's attempt to end his life through MAID, thanks to his mother Margaret's social media campaign, which included a petition posted on both Change.org and CitizenGo. Marciller said, quote, "We managed to put a little bit of fear in the doctor, but another doctor might pick up the situation," unquote. Keanu, 23, was depressed, diabetic, and had lost his vision in one eye. He didn't have a job or a girlfriend. Marciller was able to access her son's email on September 7th and learned that he had his death scheduled for September 22nd. And here's a quote, "I am confirming the following timing." And I believe this is from his emails, the son's emails. "I am confirming the following timing. Please arrive at 8:30 a.m. I will ask for the nurse at 8:45 a.m., and I will start the procedure." Isn't that a sinister-sounding word? I'll interject. Procedure. "At around 9 a.m.
Yes, annihilation.
Yes, procedure will be completed a few minutes after it begins, the doctor said in the email. The procedure entailed administering two drugs, first a coma-inducing agent, then a neuromuscular blocker, which would stop Keanu's breathing. He would be dead in 5 to 10 minutes. On September 16th, Tepper texted Marciller to say that he'd postponed her son's death until September 28th. After 5 days, the doctor texted her again to say that he wasn't going through with it. He apparently wanted nothing more to do with Keanu. And now, we move on. The euthanasia goals of the elites' depopulation plan always target the weak, the ill, and the handicapped. From the Federalist, "Europe silences people with Down syndrome to soothe women who think it's okay to kill them in the womb." This is by Michael O'Shea, September 28, 2022. On Thursday, after a long legal battle, the European Court of Human Rights struck a blow against free speech and dignity for people with disabilities by failing to rule in favor of a French Down syndrome advocacy organization. The court found inadmissible a petition from Foundation Jérôme Lejeune, France's leading organization for Down syndrome research and care, which claimed the French state television's 2016 decision to ban one of its messages constituted unjust censorship. The message, a television adaptation of the video, "Dear Future Mom," offers encouragement to a mother expecting a baby with Down syndrome. Several individuals with the condition share some of the fulfilling moments in their lives. It ends with them embracing their mothers. The group's goal with the video was to dispel misconceptions about people with Down syndrome. Such an innocuous goal caused it to run afoul of the French Broadcasting Council, however.
And Lou, today you just told me something I didn't know, that General de Gaulle had a daughter with Down syndrome. And then I ask you, well, how did he treat her? We know about old Joe Kennedy, what he did with his daughter Rosemary, who probably just had some ADD or was a little autistic. He had her lobotomized secretly so that his wife Rose did not even know this and was appalled. And, of course, lobotomies turn people into vegetables. But de Gaulle wasn't like that. What did you tell me from all reports?
Yes, in spite of the fact that de Gaulle was always portrayed as having a very crusty personality, hard to get along with, dictatorial, he had a very soft spot for this daughter with the Down syndrome. He loved her, and he said he couldn't be what he was without her. And he just treated her, according to numerous people, very, very well, and loved to be with her.
Yes, yeah, so now this is the way mankind ought to be when we're under Christian civilization values. Now, back to your article, so important.
Yes, and such an innocuous goal, that is to dispel misconceptions about people with Down syndrome, caused it, that is the producers of this video, to run afoul of the French Broadcasting Council. The Broadcasting Authority called the production disturbing.
Now, again, look at the change. De Gaulle was the epitome of French culture.
Yes.
And now we see the values of our beloved Western civilization being dismantled, destroyed, culture canceled. And here's another bastardization with Satan grabbing the opposite, the death values. Go ahead about this council.
Yeah, they called the broadcasting production disturbing to the consciences of some women, and claimed it was not, quote, a message of general interest, unquote. The ECHR, and that again is the European Court of Human Rights, ruling is morally troubling because it favors the sensibilities of post-aborted women over those of individuals who have Down syndrome and their families. It's legally troubling because it is a blatant attack against free speech. And it's logically troubling because, though the video allegedly does not portray, quote, a message of general interest, unquote, it has won awards from artistic and creative organizations across Europe, including one at Cannes, and currently boasts more than 8.4 million views on YouTube. As in many such cases, the ECHR's ruling is more about political preferences than any semblance of law or rights. Quote, the government should never exert pressure to silence the peaceful voices of its citizens. It is particularly egregious that the censored voices, in this case, were those of persons with Down syndrome. This outcome sends the signal that persons with disabilities are somehow less worthy of being seen and heard in the public square, said Alisa Corin, Director of Legal Communications for ADF International, the legal advocacy group representing Fondation Jérôme Lejeune. And she went on to say, the implication here is that the voices of Down syndrome advocates do not merit general interest, which serves only to contribute to a culture of discrimination, unquote. The Lejeune case sets a particularly unacceptable precedent because it denies support to a vulnerable group, an actually vulnerable group that doesn't have an annual Pride Month sponsored by transnational corporations. This calls for special vigilance in support of these vulnerable fellow citizens, as the European bureaucratic apparatus, vocally antagonistic in matters of life and family, seems to offer, at best, a relegated place for them in the Europe of tomorrow. European bureaucrats need not look far for inspiration for such a chilling societal development. It is visible just 1,300 miles away from the EU Parliament, on the same continent, in a country that is subject to virtually all EU laws through its membership in the European Economic Area. Iceland, with its minuscule and isolated population, and therefore understandably familiar relationship with genetic testing, that is, cousin marriage is an uncountable, realistic possibility there, has been a pioneer in tacit euthanasia.
And, Lou, this kind of a twisted evil has to come in to play again in this COVID pandemic, plandemic situation. You told me now about the Duke University case, of a young girl who was refused. Was it a kidney transplant?
It was some kind of life-saving surgery. I don't remember the exact title.
Yes, and I think we might have more on this later, and I believe
yes.
Her name is Yulia, and she was adopted by this American family. She was a Ukrainian, and because she didn't have the COVID shot, they refused the transplant, and she had physical problems already that necessitated she not take an experimental COVID vaccine because it could really harm her. So we can see how the euthanasia is slowly, this ideal is slowly becoming a reality and encroaching upon more groups of people, not just Down syndrome children to be eradicated, not just depressed people, not just disabled people, but every way that people can be killed, they're going to be killed. So now we move in to the second kind of demon, and I say here, there's A, euthanasia to reduce the population. And Stu Peters, his new movie, released on November 21st, died suddenly. This is making a big impact. The COVID clot shot continues as the world's cleansing apparatus of the old, the sick, and via this bioweapon, we're going to see people. We've heard the newest reports that they're going to keep dying 3 to 5 years afterward. And Lou, you know I keep looking at the local obituaries in Maryland.
Yep.
And again, it's showing up young people, 28, 30, both men and women dying suddenly or peacefully at home. Some men and women in their 60s, early 70s. There are just too many for it not to be a significant phenomenon. And so this week and into next week, we're going to give you the latest things, and we're going to get into the prion connection. What's going to happen to the brains of these people who've gotten all the vaccine shots? And so we now have another corroboration. We kick it off with this corroboration of Richard Hirschman, the mortician here in America, who found this strange kind of rubbery clots. We have LifeSite News, November 3rd, 2022, Kennedy Hall. UK funeral director tells Stephen Crowder about strange blood clots found in bodies of COVID vaccinated. UK-based funeral director John O'Looney appeared on conservative talk show Louder with Crowder to share his experience in finding strange fibrous blood clots in recently deceased patients who had been, quote, fully vaccinated against COVID-19. In the interview, O'Looney described the clots as, quote, very much like calamari in their consistency and their elasticity, and said that he has never seen anything like them before. O'Looney told the podcast host, Stephen Crowder, that his interest in this strange development was piqued when, quote, we had heard a couple of reports of clotting when people were coming in who were dying, clearly not from COVID. He said that they found it, quote, very difficult to embalm, to the point where he thought there was an issue with the pump, which he said had never previously happened. He also told Crowder that he has significant experience in dealing with dead bodies and that it is his professional duty to, quote, raise any concerns he has to the coroner as per the professional standards of his trade.
O'Looney relayed that he had told the coroner about his concerns and eventually received a response that alleged the clots must have grown after the person had died. Nothing grows inside your arteries post-mortem, he said. It just doesn't. The only thing that grows in your body post-mortem is perhaps mold, he added. As your body begins to break down, your arteries don't fill up with a white rubbery structure when you die, unquote. O'Looney said that his embalmer likewise expressed that he had never seen anything similar to these clots in his 20 years in the profession, adding that he knows of other funeral directors willing to go public with the same information. As part of their show prep, the Louder with Crowder team contacted funeral directors across the United States. Many of them were reluctant to talk about the issue, while some said they hadn't seen anything like what O'Looney was reporting. However, one man spoke at length with the show producer about his experience, most of which mirrored O'Looney's own testimony. The man said he was witnessing clots that were so big that he had to, quote, make an incision on the femur to inject down just to get the clots out, unquote. According to the man, this particular body was received from the hospital just hours after death, making any significant growth of fibrous clots in such a short amount of time unlikely. He said, quote, "That's unnatural. There is something wrong with that," unquote. According to the show, they tried to reconnect with the gentleman, but were ghosted. That's in quotes, ghosted on all fronts. Later in the interview, Crowder pressed Looney on the idea that perhaps these fibrous clots have occurred in both unvaccinated people as well as vaccinated. Crowder stated, quote, "It could be the direct result of a COVID and the nature of the spike protein, which, of course, we know occurs organically as well," unquote. Looney replied and said that in his experience, he has not seen an unvaccinated person with a clot. And he said that an Obama named Richard Hirschman, who, like Looney, has reported the presence of strange clots in deceased people, has only found the same type of clots in one unvaccinated person. However, this unvaccinated person had previously received a blood transfusion sourced from a vaccinated person, according to Looney.
Now, Lou, this is a very important delineation.
Yes.
This is extremely important because we'll probably get disinformation trying to tell us that it's an equal phenomenon in the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. And again, this tells us the dangers of the blood supply. The Red Cross is not really monitoring this. And now they've changed that policy, I think, that the homosexual groups can just give blood. So, you know, if you're going to be in an accident, you better hope that you've taken some of your own blood and stored it, had it stored. Go ahead with that article.
Looney also said that he has spoken to multiple doctors in the British National Health Service, NHS, who have confirmed off the record that the strange clotting seems to be linked to the mRNA vaccines. He said, quote, "Everybody knows," unquote.
Very, very interesting, Lou.
Yes.
And we know that there are still naysayers who are not admitting anything, but we're going to get into the effect of Stu Peters' big movie. Millions of people are going to wake up now. Died suddenly at StuPeters.com, and that's StuPeters.com. It's been a real pleasure to come to you. And just like those broadcasters, those brave broadcasters at the BBC and other places, Lou, one of your favorites was, the author of The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich.
Yes, William L. Shirer, also Edward R. Murrow, very, very famous man, and many other great ones. And they kept on going despite the headquarters being bombed in London.
And so as long as God helps us, and he did do a miracle, no one would have bought that old house but the particular Christian man God had in mind. This was planned for you, Lou, and me, so that we could keep coming to you as long as God will. God bless you this time of Christmas. When our late dear friend Carl Sanders, who was our co-broadcaster, said people's hearts grow softer at Christmas, we can reach them with the Lord. Good night.